Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hey, thanks for tuning in today. Glad to have you listening in. This is Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem, and I always appreciate the opportunity to get together and visit on a variety of topics and find ways that we can apply biblical principles to daily life, connecting faith to life every day. It's our heartbeat here at Faith Radio. Ted Ross at the controls, and Carissa's at the phones, and looking forward to a good conversation today with our guest. We'll introduce him in a moment. Ted, I'm wearing my Chris Christie at the Dallas Cowboys sweater today because it was that cold.
So oh, yeah. Do I have to give you a hug now? Is that,
well,
how that works?
No, I don't think that, don't think that's probably necessary. And I'm not filling it out quite like he does.
Sure, but, right.
But it is a pretty fresh fresh season that we're in right now.
Absolutely, yeah. There's a bit of a warm-up on the way, but it's not going to feel much like a warm-up. Right. Single-digit temps, double-digit temps maybe. But.
Say, maybe if you're new to Faith Radio or maybe even new to your faith and you'd like to find some ways to grow in your faith, could use some help, we have a great study Bible that we're giving away. Excited about that, thanks to our friends at Turning Point and Dr. David Jeremiah's new study Bible. Making that available, doing a drawing at the end of the month. So you can go and sign up on our website at myfaithradio.com and sign up for the study Bible drawing. We'll draw a winner from that at the end of the month, and that'll be something that could really help you grow in your faith early on in the new year. So check that out, myfaithradio.com. And you know, if you're new to Faith Radio, we've got a welcome packet as well. I'll give you a little information about Faith Radio and some other encouraging content. So it's all available online, myfaithradio.com. Maybe you're new to church, or you'd go to church if you felt like it was really, if it was, say, for example, if the people really loved one another like a family, if you could really be trained and grow in your faith so that you could disciple others and you could really be focused about living in mission, and you'd really get together for some significant times of prayer and fellowship and the study of the Word, well, that's kind of the heartbeat of our guest today, who has kind of adjusted his direction, trajectory, perhaps, and is working right now in the San Francisco Bay Area as a servant at Crazy Love, which is a ministry at Francis Chan, if you're familiar with that book. And, you know, if there's a book you should read for 2015, Crazy Love would certainly be on the top of the list. We want to introduce you to Kevin Kim. Kevin served in the past as director of innovation at Menlo Park Presbyterian Church, which is in the Bay Area, and he was a teaching pastor there. And that's the church where John and Nancy Ortberg are leader. And he was born in Iran, all these Korean, which is old, and grew up in Virginia. So there's we could probably get into all that story. But Kevin, welcome to Faith Radio and Connecting Faith.
Thanks for having me, Neil. It's great to be here.
The reason I wanted to talk with Kevin earlier this past year, I saw an announcement, an email about an activity called Code for the Kingdom, and it kind of just sparked my interest about using technology to see if we could go after and to really make an impact on some kingdom issues. And Kevin was one of those that was involved in the beginnings of that. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that, about technology use, but also about what church really looks like. But Kevin, I think I just want to start with you can maybe tell a little bit about your story, but you are a director of innovation. And in fact, it seems like innovative thinking probably needs to be a little bit more evident in many of our churches. Just having as a position on a Presbyterian church seems like kind of innovative in itself. So talk a little bit about maybe innovation in terms of mission and ministry.
Yeah, director of innovation. There are not many churches that have such pretentious job titles as that. And so we're glad at Menlo Press to pioneer that. Actually, it was a really cool experience that I think has huge implications for the broader church body. We had the privilege, thanks to a very generous donor, to spend 2 years thinking about, ideating about, experimenting with how the church can bring the best of its imagination and creativity to mission and ministry. And this project was headed by a guy named Gary Hamel, who was ranked by Forbes as one of the most influential business thinkers in the world, and then had support from IDEO, which is one of the most innovative design companies in the world. And we had folks from Google and Pixar helping us think through this stuff. So it was incredible. And personally, it changed everything about how I think about ministry and mission. So it was really fun.
I thought, you know, early on this new year, I think a lot of us are thinking about, all right, we want to grow spiritually, personally, but, you know, what would that look like on a broader scale? And could we really make a difference in maybe, you know, partnering in some ministries? Is there something that we can do, maybe using our skill set? And what does it look like in church? Well, talk a little bit more about that, you know, maybe what churches tend to lack in terms of innovation, or because you talked about cutting edge practices and all these things, and, you know, design. I mean, you're dealing with you know, some pretty at the cutting edge, really, of you know, innovation in our nation. So you're using some of these same ideas and trying to apply it to the church. Did that work?
Yeah. So that's a really good question. I think you know, when people think about innovation, their mind immediately jumps to innovative technology or newer, cooler ways to do stuff. But I don't think the biggest thing that the church is lacking in terms of innovation is tools or technology. I think the biggest thing that's lacking in churches in terms of innovation is courage and permission. You know, people always ask, all right, you did this whole thing, and what's the answer? What's the new practice? What's the new tool? What's the new thing that's, you know, that's going to, you know, push the church forward and solve the problems? And it is what it has always been, which is God, prayer, right? And so that's not the issue. That I don't think that's how you can think about innovation. I think for us, the biggest thing was getting churches to be courageous and having permission to experiment. You need to risk in order to truly innovate. And risk requires courage. It requires you to challenge the status quo. It requires you to be that squeaky wheel, to be that misfit. And, you know, those are not intrinsically fun labels, right? And so, you know, oftentimes in churches or in organizations that are really culturally entrenched, you know, innovation doesn't take place because, you know, you have systems and you have processes that are built to eradicate disruption. You know, they're built to maximize efficiency. They're built to preserve the core, and therefore any challenge or disruption to that efficiency or that institutional preservation is met with hostile opposition. And those people who introduce those disruptive ideas or practices are met with hostile opposition. You know, they're shut down, they're cast out, they're relegated to silence. And, you know, that's the beginning of the end for an organization, because the world is changing and organizations have to change with the world. And so the biggest need for the church, I think, right now is to see the need for innovation, to have the courage to innovate, and then to bring in and not cast out those disruptive voices.
Does it have to be either or can it be both and? I mean, because maximizing efficiency, for example, I mean, that seems like there's some real value in those kinds of things, right?
Oh, absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. You can't have one without the other. You know, part of the innovative process is once you find something that works for your organization, or, you know, is this new product or service that adds value to, you know, the people around you, you know, you want to be able to scale that. You want to be able to embed that. And so absolutely, organizations need to be thinking about efficiency and maximizing their impact. But they also, I think, have to create that space. It's almost like that, you know, Google's, you know, 10% rule, where they say, you know, 10% of your time at Google you can use to do whatever crazy project that you want to work on. And, you know, we'll fund that time. you know, we'll pay for that time. But you get to exercise your creativity and think outside the box on a certain project that you're passionate about. I think organizations should have something like that where, yeah, for the most part, you're building and kind of doing what works. But then there also has to be a margin, that space, for you to do something truly disruptive.
Is this something that is just, you know, only maybe a handful of people? The Gary Hamels of the world and, you know, those that are, you know, really kind of innovators? Or, I mean, can all of us do this if we just carved out 10% of our free time to do some dreaming?
Oh, yeah. No, that's a great question. This is a question that gets asked a lot. And so, you know, at the onset of the project, you know, people's hesitation or skepticism was, you know, maybe I'm just not that creative type. You know, this type of work is for those people who are over at Google or IDEO or Pixar. That's not me. That's not my church. And what I say is, you know, we were all made in the image of a creative God, and that creativity in some expression is latent within all of us. And so absolutely, yes, I think all people have dreams and visions and convictions and passions and great creativity within them. And I think you just need to have space and permission to access that, and then a place for you to come alongside other people and collaborate and just experiment with that to try things out. You know, here's the thing. You know, when you look at some of the greatest creative endeavors, it wasn't like, for the most part, it wasn't some super creative person that went into a room, closed the doors, and then got this grand epiphany and then came out and said, here's the answer. A lot of it was just going out there and saying, man, I'm really passionate about this. I want to see this happen. And, you know, I'm going to bring my best ideas forward. I'm going to try it out. It's going to fail. I'm going to fail. I'm going to fail. I'm going to try again, try again, and try again. And then along that process of pivoting and learning and iteration, you know, you have that great idea that comes to fruition. And so absolutely anybody, everybody can do this.
We're talking about some ways that maybe we can use cutting-edge practices to really launch missional communities and kingdom ventures. And we're going to talk a little bit about something called tech hackathons. We're going to get to that and more in a moment with Kevin Kim. Kevin is right now, he's working with Francis Chan to build a movement of house churches, starting with the inner city of San Francisco. We're going to hear more about that story. Pretty amazing story, and just want to encourage you to stay tuned for a great conversation as we maybe think and dream and give ourselves some permission to risk for the kingdom. More with Kevin Kim coming up in just a moment on Connecting Faith.
Build your kingdom here. Let the darkness fear. Show your mighty hand. Heal our streets and lands. Set your church on fire. Win this nation back. Change the atmosphere. Build your kingdom here. We pray.
18 past the hour. Talking today with Kevin Kim on Connecting Faith. Kevin is a servant, part of the team at Crazy Love. He's working with Francis Chan to build a movement of house churches, starting at the inner city of San Francisco. He's in the Bay Area. He served as director of innovation at Menlo Park Presbyterian Church for a season, and was instrumental in something called Code for the Kingdom. And so talk a little bit about tech hackathons, what that is, and you know, how can we use actually technology to really make a difference?
Absolutely. So I reside in Silicon Valley, the you know, widely known as the epicenter of technology. And so we were sitting at Google one day, my friends and I, and we're saying, man, we have all these believers in tech who are doing amazing things at work, but are pretty much latent in church. You know, the church doesn't really have a place for them except to lead a small group or to serve coffee, which are great things, by the way. But, you know, these guys are disrupting the world with the technologies that they create. You know, one of my friends, you know, he's the lead designer on Google Glass. And so that's the kind of stuff that they're working on. So they're doing this stuff at work that's super challenging, super impactful. And then for ministry, you know, they're handing out bulletins. And so, you know, we recognize this huge vacuum of opportunity. And we said, what if we could gather some of our friends and throw a hackathon? You know, it's just this place where developers and technologists would come in. And we would bring in these developers, these designers, these entrepreneurs, these investors, and we'd pose these big innovation challenges like global poverty or human trafficking or spiritual formation or evangelism in front of them. And we would ask them, you know, what sort of platforms or technologies would you guys create to solve some of these global issues? And so we had them ideate, we had them brainstorm, pitch, form teams, and then go out and build. It was really pretty cool. In terms of outcomes, you know, for us, when we first started it, we just thought, all right, we have no expectation of outcomes because we've never done this before. And so a win for us is if we had these techies come and we gave them pizza and they met each other and they had a good time, you know, and then maybe some cool ideas would come out after it. But, you know, after our first hackathon, we had some pretty incredible outputs. We had a team that was formed at that hackathon that wanted to work on how technology could help shape spiritual formation. These were a few guys from Google. And so what ended up happening is that they liked the project so much that they quit Google. They quit Google, and they launched a startup, their own startup called Abide. And, you know, their first product is a prayer app. At our first hackathon, you know, I talked a little bit about, you know, posing these big global issues like human trafficking. And so IJM, International Justice Mission, they heard about what we were doing, and they sent over a developer from D.C., from their team. And so we had a team on our side working with their developer from D.C. on technology to help fight human trafficking and eradicate slavery. And so those were just a few examples of some of the projects that came out of this Code for the Kingdom hackathon.
And, in fact, these are kind of going on now sort of regionally around the country. Is that right? Or periodically? Right?
Yeah, no. So the first one was a wild success. We were helped incredibly by the fine folks at Leadership Network, and they came alongside and supported, and then just really were a huge part of the hackathon. And then, you know, they saw just how successful the first one was, and so they said, you know, this shouldn't just reside in Silicon Valley. We should have these all over the place. And so we had one in Seattle. We had one in Austin, Texas. We're going to have one in New York. So it's starting to catch, you know, because technology is a huge part of society right now, and you have a lot of brilliant people in technology all over the United States, all over the world, who are believers, passionate about building God's kingdom, and then who want to leverage their gifts and their competencies and their skill sets to do something that's eternally impactful. And so, yeah, it's caught on pretty well.
So let's talk to maybe church leaders or, you know, people listening that have a skill set that could be tapped or harvested, or, you know, harnessed for kingdom work. Maybe they're just they're serving coffee or handing out bulletins. They'd really like to do something that really matters. So
yeah.
What would you say to them, and then maybe to churches to find some ways to really or ministries to really tap into this passion to make a difference?
That's a great question. I mean, I think there's a huge need for people to connect their work with their faith in innovative ways. What's happened in the church that I think is completely unhelpful is this bifurcation of the sacred and the secular, this complete separation where you say, my work is my work and my faith is my faith. My 9-to-5, I'm thinking about work and I'm thinking about making money and paying the bills. And then Sunday is my time with God. And, you know, there was this great Dutch theologian, Abraham Kuyper, talks about this in his lectures on Calvinism. He says, you know, there's not one square inch of all creation about which Christ Jesus does not cry out, this is mine, this belongs to me. And so everything is spiritual. Everything's infused with glory. Everything is, you know, a worship unto the Lord. Your faith is a worship unto the Lord, or your work is a worship unto the Lord. And so your faith and work have to be integrated. In fact, you know, we see all the way from Genesis that work is a gift from God. You know, Dallas Willard says that it's one of the primary places where we're spiritually formed, and we don't think about it like that. We don't think I'm being shaped profoundly spiritually at work, whether I'm a minister or I'm a car salesman. And so back to your question, I think, yes, it's important for churches to help people like just bring it up and teach people around the integration of their faith and their work, no matter what generation that you're in. And, you know, a church that's at the forefront of this, that's really been helpful in my thinking, is Redeemer Presbyterian in New York City with Tim Keller. I have a friend of mine who is the executive director of their Center for Faith and Work, and he's, you know, David, and he's doing a lot of things to push out resources to help churches help their people think about that faith-work integration. And on the flip side of it, people, congregants, they can't simply passively rely on their church leaders to figure this out. You know, they got to pray, they got to ask for discernment, and they got to show initiative with their God-given creativity, and then, you know, think about awesome creative ways to bring their skills to bear on kingdom work.
Connecting faith and work, connecting faith and life. We talk about it a lot here on Faith Radio, and talking today with Kevin Kim. By the way, you can check out his website, kevinkimsf.com. KevinKimSF.com for San Francisco. He's in the Bay Area, and he's a servant at Crazy Love. He's working with Francis Chan. And talk a little bit about, so you're hanging out in Menlo Park, Presbyterian, and then you get connected with Francis Chan and end up, you're kind of doing inner city church planting. Well, let's get started with the story. We'll pick it up after the break, too.
Yeah, it is interesting. So, you know, one moment I'm in one of the wealthiest zip codes in the United States in Silicon Valley and working on this project called Catalyst around innovation in the church. And the whole charter of Catalyst was, could we bring the best of our creativity and our imagination to the work of the kingdom? Could we, you know, think outside the box about how we do mission and ministry. And so essentially the goal was, you know, could we change the way that, you know, we think about church and the way that we do church and in ways that are helpful. And so, you know, I was working on that project, and then at the tail end of that project, as that project was winding down, Francis came to me, and, you know, there aren't a lot of pastors in San Francisco. It's growing now, but, you know, in the past, it's been a hard place for ministry. And so we all know each other, pray for one another, support one another. And so I knew Francis when he first landed, and, you know, we stayed connected, and we were talking about church one day. But, you know, he knew about the work that I was doing. I was telling him about the work that I was doing. And then, you know, he said, you know, hey, I want to change everything about the way church works. And then he said, I'm going to plant in the worst, most violent part of San Francisco. And then he said, and I can't pay you anything. And for me, it just sounded like an awesome, fun challenge. So I left Menlo, but with their blessing. It was not a leaving, but a sending out from Menlo to help plant these innovative new churches with Francis in the inner city of San Francisco.
We'll pick up the story after the break. It's pretty fascinating. We'll get into some great discussion about, you know, what could or should church really look like? Are there some core values that are worth reviewing? Kevin Kim, my guest today, and we're hearing the story on Connecting Faith. By the way, if you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-93-FAITH. And check out Kevin's website as well, KevinKimSF.com. More coming up in just a moment. Stay tuned.
Their It's grow it, pose it, pick it, brush it, crack it, twitch, update it, name it, read it, tune it, print it, scan it, send it, fax, rename it.
You got that, Neil? Did you do all that?
I'm, you know, I always felt like I'll wait till technology stops advancing before I buy in. So anyway, wow. We're talking today with Kevin Kim. This is Connecting Faith. Kevin served as director of innovation at Menlo Park Presbyterian Church and one of the teaching pastors there, and has a degree from Stanford and also from Biblical Theological Seminary, University of Virginia, and has partnered with Francis Chan here in a new kind of ministry outreach that Francis is leading to plant churches in the Bay Area, in San Francisco. And Kevin, you're just kind of talking a little bit about how you met Francis, and that, you know, it's San Francisco is not really an easy place for Christian faith, as I understand. So maybe a little bit about were there some uniquenesses that made it even more challenging? Say, how can we actually plant a church here?
Yeah. So the way it started was over Korean barbecue, which is the way all good things start. And, you know, Francis, as you guys know, if you're familiar with his ministry, he was the senior pastor of a large mega church down in Simi Valley for over 17 years. And then I'd been in Menlo Park Presbyterian for about 7 years in, you know, a large mega church. And so we're sitting down over Korean barbecue, eating, and then just talking about church, talking about, you know, our church experiences, and saying, you know, there were a lot of cool things and benefits to that mega church model, you know, the way that you could leverage resources and you could mobilize people to do big impactful things. But for all the benefits, there were these like huge concerns for us. And so we just got to talking about that. And then we were reading passages in Isaiah and Amos and Malachi where, you know, we found out it was quite possible to have a church gathering that God was not pleased with. Mm. You know, we just kind of assume that if we have three Chris Tomlin songs, a three-point sermon, and an offering, God's going to be pleased. But, you know, it's not so. And so when we asked from Scripture, what are some of the non-negotiables that we wanted to build our church on? What are some things that, you know, for God, this was so important to the identity of the church, the life of the church, that he would say, man, you have all these other things, but you don't have this, then I don't want any of it. And, you know, if we would fail at that, even though we succeeded at everything else, it would still be a fail. But these things that if we succeeded at but failed at everything else, we could still die happy and content. And so for us, it came down to four words: family, training, mission, and worship. And, you know, it's not rocket science. You know, obviously it's really very simple. But, you know, from our church experience, collective church experience, it's not something that you see in a lot of churches where you're like, wow, yes, this church, they are a family. Not, they have pockets of little families, but this church is a family, and this church raises up disciple-making disciples, and this church is fully engaged in mission in that every decision is filtered through the grid of mission. And this church, it has this worship that's simple and compelling, and it doesn't need all these other props, but it just needs Jesus at the center. And so those were our four non-negotiables. And like you mentioned before, we're planting in San Francisco, which is pretty strategic, and it's a unique laboratory for this thing. You know, I love San Francisco. San Francisco's great. You have a lot of good, intelligent, articulate, passionate people who are not just neutral, but they're antagonistic to the gospel. And, you know, I think the figure is 93% of the city would not identify themselves as Christians. And so instead of being intimidated by that, you know, we had to look at that like an incredible opportunity. I mean, it's huge. First, like the pond is big. 93% who don't believe. That's huge space for kingdom work. And then second, you know, what San Francisco does, just like New York and L.A., is it requires you to bring your A game. They don't let you get away with slot theology or ecclesiology or philosophy. And so it forces you to think deeply about what you believe and why you believe it, because it's going to be challenged in 1,000 different ways. And third, San Francisco is huge for us because it's the culture-forming womb of the world. You know, L.A. has its media, New York is the modern Rome, but San Francisco is the tech capital of the world. And, you know, these are key cities for global influence. And so for us, we're saying, man, to see God move here in powerful ways and to have this place be shaped and transformed by the gospel, that could have huge implications globally.
You know, as you talked about those four words, family, training, mission, and worship, and then, you know, in a setting where 93%, you know, aren't engaged in that, I guess, the question is that attractive? You know, not that, you know, I guess obviously we've had a whole generation of churches that have been focusing on being attractive to those that, you know, may or may not be interested, but is this a matter of being faithful to, you know, what God's word says, and so whether anybody comes or not, or is this really attractive to love one another like a family and be trained and discipled and live in mission and, you know, worship? But talk about that.
I think it's both. I think on the one hand, it is the kingdom of God is very attractive, you know, because our hearts were meant for it. Our beings were meant, our souls were meant for the kingdom, whether we acknowledge Christ or not. It's what C.S. Lewis calls that God-shaped hole in your heart, right? That and so we were built for community. Our God is a communal God. I mean, the Trinity is the you know, the essence of community. And so, you know, you have these things that resonate deeply within us that can only be found in its truest form in the life of the kingdom. And so in one way, it's absolutely attractive. But I think the biggest thing for us is that, you know, we're building off of, what we're saying is we don't want these things merely because it's popular and attractive or, you know, it's a great ministry plan. You know, we're building off these values because these are core convictions of what the church has to be. And so there is no going around like that primary metaphor of the body as family. There is no getting away from the calling of the church to make disciples of all nations and to live its life in mission and to have Christ as the center. And so, you know, for Francis, you know, I remember one house church gathering, he was just saying, man, these are four things that, you know, God desires in his church. And so if it just ends up that we have the people in this room that are doing this, then, you know, that's fine. We cannot lose these values. And so, you know, it's kind of like what you said. I do deeply believe that they are, you know, attractive to, and God will attract those people to it, but we're not building it because it is attractive.
So talk about what it maybe looks like in practice for you in terms of, you know, community and, you know, in inner city San Francisco. You know, what have you done?
Oh, absolutely. And so one of the things that, okay, so let's take family, our first value. One of the things that I love about part of what we're trying to build is the juxtaposition of two things that normally you don't see together in churches, which is high diversity and high affinity. And so what I love is that here in our house church, you have people from the spectrum of life sitting down together, and they're not just forced into a room like just these eclectic pieces, you know, aggregating together at, you know, just for an hour and then dispersing out. You know, these are, it's like family. And so for my house church in particular, I'll give you that example. My house church, I'm looking out and, you know, I see Carl, who's the CEO of a medical device company. And then there's Marino, who's a, you know, ex-UFC fighter who had his life messed up by his meth addiction and now is in recovery. Then you have Julie, who's she has a Harvard MBA and ran a billion-dollar division for Ford. And then you have John Sardina, who is 2 years out of prison. And then you have my kids, who are 7, 4, and 2, just running around. And when they're running around, they don't say, oh, that's Carl, the CEO, and that's Julie, the Harvard grad, and that's Marino, the drug addict, and that's John, the ex-convict. They just see that's Auntie Julie and Uncle Carl and, you know. And so, you know, we really try to create this sense of family there with this incredible diversity. Now, you know, it's hard. It's absolutely hard. But, you know, that's what I love about it is that, you know, it in this context, you really cannot rely on your flesh to build the affinity. You have to rely on the supernatural power of God. You have to pray. It has to be a supernatural thing. You know, you run up against the limitations of your flesh to care for and be compassionate towards people. I think in churches, there are churches, obviously, that have great affinity. You know, they small groups that do love one another. You know, we had that at Menlo, but then when I would look out, I would say, yeah, but you guys are just like each other. You know, you think the same, you talk, you're educated in the same places. You guys would have been friends with or without the gospel, you know? But here, where there is this intentional diversity there, I mean, there's no way anyone looking in would say, oh, yeah, that group makes sense. It doesn't make sense, but that group loves one another like family. Like, that's huge for us. And so that's a real practical thing of what it means to be the church for us. You know, this gospel community where people from all walks of life are being brought together under the name of Christ and the power of Christ, you know, for the glory of Christ. And, like, it's working. And obviously, it has its moments, but that's family as well. We all know that, you know, part of what it means to be in family is to go through conflict and to give grace and to receive grace, and no matter what happens, you're still family.
That the challenge to really work through those issues of, you know, reconciliation, I guess, and, you know, we kind of read about that. Yeah, Jesus broke down the walls. That's good, but we're sort of still in our own little categories, aren't we?
Right. Exactly.
Kevin Kim, my guest today. Kevin serves with Francis Chan. It's a servant of Crazy Love. They're working to build a movement of house churches, starting with the inner city of San Francisco. We'll talk a little bit more about some of what they're doing and some of the ways that they're, you know, resourcing this ministry, and get some good insight, I think, for all of us as well. Hopefully you're gaining some encouragement and some challenge here in this new year about how we can maybe take courage and risk a bit and pursue advancing God's kingdom in many ways. Kevin Kim joining us today. You can find out more about him on his website, Kevin Kim SF, or San Francisco, kevinkimsf.com. More in a moment here on Connecting Faith. It's 46 past the hour, and spent a little time today talking about church in 2015, what that might look like, what are some core values, what church can and should be. Kevin Kim is a part of what God is doing in some fresh new ways in the San Francisco urban area. Kevin served for a time, as was a number of years, with Menlo Park Presbyterian Church, director of innovation there. He's working with Francis Chan. In fact, he spent some time, I know, learning how to do book publishing of Francis' new book, and we should say a word about that. And maybe to start that, Kevin, talk a little bit about maybe what you've discovered about sort of funding and resourcing ministries. You know, you came out of a mega church. Francis led a mega church for a number of years, so now you're into kind of urban house church things. That's a whole different paradigm.
It is. And one of the things that we discovered was how much finances and funding affected ministry decisions. What was fascinating to me, Neil, is that, you know, I asked my church planter friends, I asked about 10 of them, said, look, if God just said, I'm going to give you a blank check for whatever amount of dollars, and here's what I want you to do. I want you to reach the lost for the gospel, and I want you to make and raise up disciple-making disciples. I asked my church planting friends who were all over from Atlanta, New York, L.A., San Francisco. I asked them, would you build what you're building right now? And all of them to the T said no. And it's interesting. Then it's, you know, it begs the question, you know, then why are you building what you're building right now? And basically what, you know, what's going on is that they're trying to build that sustainability medium in order to do ministry, that engine that's going to fund the ministry. That's what they're trying to build. And so what ends up happening is, you know, most of their time gets focused in on institutional preservation. They go in thinking, all right, in order for me to get insurance and to get paid and to pay my staff and to keep the lights on, I need this building, I need this many people showing up, I need this amount of budget, and everything kind of is affected by that. And so early on in, you know, with regards to our house church, we said, we introduced this paradigm, which, no, it's challenging, but I love it. We said, we're going to spend $0 on staff. We're going to spend $0 on facilities. And 100% of the tithes and offerings that come in go out to local and global missions. Now, that has huge implications, Neil. That means that I can't get, you know, I have to figure out a way to have creative alternative means for my own sustainability in the work of the ministry, right? And so, you know, all of us, it's geared towards equipping lay leaders. It's geared towards tent making. And then it's also geared towards creative missional businesses. And so for us here in San Francisco, a couple of things that we've done. Number one, we're launching a Hawaiian barbecue restaurant where the proceeds of that restaurant would go help fund the inner city ministry, and then any excess would go to a partner in Ethiopia. With the publishing, you know, Francis recently self-published his latest book, You and Me Forever, a great book on marriage. And one of the reasons why he did that was because for his 20th anniversary, he and Lisa, instead of going to the Bahamas or Mexico, which, you know, he could have done with a clear conscience, he could have done. But they said, man, 20 years has been good to us. He's been faithful to us. He's given us amazing children. He's given us an amazing journey, an amazing ministry. And so, you know, to commemorate 20 years of God's faithfulness to our marriage and to our family, you know, we want to go serve somewhere. And, so what they decided to do is they decided to go to Ethiopia with one of our partners, Crisis Aid International. And so Francis and Lisa are there in Ethiopia. And what they saw there just rocked their world. I mean, they've been to places all over the world. They've seen extreme poverty all over the world. But Ethiopia and that trip in particular really shook them to their core. And, you know, there was this one time where they're ministering in the red light district of Addis, and Francis and Lisa are sitting there, and they're talking to 9, 10, 11-year-old girls who are selling their bodies for a dollar in order to make $5 to live, $3 for food and $2 for rent. And he's looking at these girls and he's thinking, these girls are the same age as my daughter Mercy. And what if my daughter had to sell her body in order to just survive? And so he's there, he's talking to these girls, and then, you know, this ministry, they go out into the streets and they say, hey, look, we're gonna throw a party. And everyone is invited. There's going to be food and there's going to be drinks and dancing and music. And, you know, you're all invited. Come on. And so they threw this party and 700 of these young women, I don't even want to call them prostitutes, but these young women showed up to this party. And, you know, they had a couple of women share their testimony of God's faithfulness. 200 of these young girls gave their life to Christ that day. You know, Francis is seeing that, and, you know, his heart's also broken. And so he asked Pat, who's the co-founder of this ministry, man, I can't see this and not do anything about it. What, you know, what can I do? And Pat says to him, well, we have this plan, this dream of a village that would house 1,000 of these young women and their children, and it would address their needs comprehensively. We would educate them and we would do job training so they would no longer have to rely on prostitution for their sustainability, and, you know, there would be a church in the center of it. And, you know, so Francis is like, man, well, let's do that. Why aren't we doing that? And you know, Pat said, well, we just never had the resources to do that. And so it just kind of sat, you know, in the back, on the back burner, you know, with the blueprints. So Francis asked him, you know, how much would it cost to build this village? He said, $5 million. So Francis comes back to me in January and says, Kev, I need to make $5 million off my next book. And I was like, you're crazy, man. It's like, Crazy Love didn't even do $5 million, you know? You know, you have a niche marriage book and you wanted to make $5 million. I said, we're never going to get there if we do traditional publishing. But, you know, from, again, my work with Catalyst and around innovation, and it's like, it's not like an answer, but it's a way of thinking. It's how do you frame a problem? And so that work was incredibly helpful as we, you know, I don't know anything about the publishing business. But Francis is like, hey, you need to figure out publishing and you need to figure out how to, you know, hack it to make $5 million off this book so that we can build this village for the girls. So, you know, we do that whole process of deep dive, insight gathering, prototyping, scaling. And basically what we did was we took publishing, we disintermediated it. We figured out all the steps in that process chain of when Francis hands over a PDF to when someone clicks on Amazon and the book gets delivered. And then we just went out and we cut deals at every point in that process. And so now, you know, I'm happy to say, you know, the book has launched. It launched on August 26th. The sales are looking good. And we are on our way, like really on our way. It's looking good, to building this village in Ethiopia for these young women. And so when you ask about funding and resourcing and creativity, I think the options are out there. It's just a scary thing to kind of step out of the safety of, yeah, you know, the church, you know, pays my bills. And I'm not saying that, like, that's a wrong model. I think, you know, a worker is worth his wages. But for us, you know, we're thinking through how expensive it is to do ministry in the city and how increasingly expensive it is to run church in the city. And for us, this is our little experiment to say, could we run church that does community, that does training and discipleship, that does mission, that does great, powerful worship, and can we do it for free? And then if we can do it for, if we can pull it off, then, you know, maybe some of the things that we learned and maybe some of the insights that we gathered would be helpful in making ministry sustainable all over the country.
So enjoy the conversation here today with Kevin Kim. We only got about 2 or 3 minutes left, and I'm just interested, Kevin, maybe some final thoughts about, you know, you've worked with guys like, you know, John Ortberg, and we talked about Gary Hamel, one of the most influential business thinkers, and you got Francis Chan. All these guys have pretty good vision and, you know, stretchability. So how do you sort of decide what to hang on to and come alongside and buy in?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Neil. I think, you know, there isn't a day that goes by that, you know, I'm just not deeply thankful for the opportunities that God has given me to work with, you know, these incredible thinkers and great men of God. You know, they each have their gifting and their vision and their contribution to the kingdom. And they're wired so different. Like, Ortberg and Chan and Hamel, they couldn't be any more different from each other. And really for me, it was in terms of discerning, you know, there isn't any secret formula for us. Even when I think back to my time before Menlo, where I was working in, you know, this Korean church, you know, a lot of it was, you know, my wife and I praying and just saying, Lord, you know, we want to do what you want us to do no matter what. We'll move no matter where, you know, we'll just whatever you want us to do, we want to do. And so, you know, as these opportunities came up, you know, we prayed intensely about it and we said, Lord, open doors and close doors. And, you know, some decisions were really clear, like doors were shut and this was the only way forward. Others were 50-50. And in those 50-50 coin toss things, you know, it really was, you know, asking myself, you know, what's going to have, you know, knowing who I am and how I'm built, what's going to have the most impact for the kingdom? And that might not be the place where it's the most prestigious or it's the safest or it's the, you know, you know, the most like it may be not to the benefit of your own livelihood and your safety, but it may be that, you know, this is a place where your particular gifts and calling and passion will be maximized for the building of God's kingdom, and then you just got to have the courage to take that step. And, you know, every time that we stepped out in faith, you know, because it was like the journey wasn't easy. There were moments where it was really tenuous for myself and my family, especially raising three young children. But every moment that we said we're going to put aside kind of our fleshly fears, and we're going to trust the God of the universe, the good God of this universe, who has always provided for us, always watched for us, always sustained us. We're just going to trust him and put our lives in his hands. And God, man, you know, just God is like the Ephesians. He's done unimaginably more than I could have ever expected or desired. And so, that's it. Yeah.
Kevin, our time is gone, but I just wanted to just introduce our listeners to you and pray for your continued blessing and ministry. KevinKimSF.com is the website to check out for more.
Thank you.